Hey everyone, it's your host of See Jurassic Right, Stephen Ray Morris here, just dropping in to say I hope you've been enjoying all the new episodes in 2023 and 2024 so far. There are new interviews with filmmakers, musicians, scientists, the screenwriter of Land Before Time, audio essays about the rich history of the Jurassic Park and Jurassic World franchise, and all the news about the upcoming animated show Jurassic World Chaos Theory, and the as-of-yet-untitled Jurassic World sequel coming next summer. I really need your help supporting the show right now, and you can do that by leaving a tip and or giving a monthly follow on Patreon, patreon.com/seejurassicright. There are $1 and $5 tiers, but more is coming. Sharing the show, giving 5-star reviews in Apple Podcasts, and liking and commenting on social, at Stephen Ray Morris on Instagram and Twitter, goes a long way to help boosting the show's visibility again online in this new era. I'm an independent podcaster, and your support is so important and means the world to me in keeping this podcast running. Link to the Patreon is in the show notes. Hold on to your butts. Thank you, and now on to the show.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Filled with odd fright, see Jurassic Right. Bathe in amber light, see Jurassic Right. See Jurassic Right, right, right. See Jurassic Right, right, right. See Jurassic Right, right, right. See Jurassic Right, see Jurassic Right. See Jurassic Park.
This man does not need any introduction, and truly, I don't know if this podcast would even be here without him, because when I first moved to LA, like about 9 years ago, I started to get back into Jurassic, and I discovered his YouTube channel, and, you know, kind of the rest is history. It's Jurassic Collectibles.
Hello.
This is such an honor to chat with you today. It's
likewise.
You know, it's funny to think about, because I think we live in such an age where, like, our fandoms are always and ever present, and there's always the threat of a new film on the horizon. But, yeah. You know, when I, in 2011, you know, it was kind of like a no man's land, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was a funny time, because when I first started the channel, it really was just on a whim. And I think a lot of people think that I purposefully set up Jurassic Collectibles because there was nothing else like it at the time. That's not true. I started it because of just starting to collect specific things that were part of my childhood. So the Red Rex was the thing that started it all, funnily enough. And I picked that up and I made a little video just to share with two friends.
Oh, wow.
And I sent it to them, and they said, "That is amazing. I remember that. That was such a kind of, you know, a toy that everyone recognized."
Yeah.
And I just left it on YouTube. I didn't do anything with the channel. I just left it there. And I think I came back a year later or so, and it was like hundreds of thousands of views. And I was like, okay, people are actually looking for this stuff. So I thought, well, I've collected a few more things since. I haven't filmed those. Let's maybe start doing this as a, you know, a few videos here and there. And it just picked up and grew and grew and grew. But it really did start on a whim of just thinking, oh, I'll just get the Red Rex. And then it kind of was propelled by people's fandom and people's enthusiasm for it. You know, I wouldn't have collected the stuff if people hadn't taken an interest in it. So, Yeah, you know, it's people like you who, you know, supported me and you know, listened and watched to the channel. And that's how Jurassic Collectibles came about, really.
Wow. That's so, I mean, well, but that feels like the perfect kind of start to something like this where, because like, you know, if I'm explaining your channel to somebody or I'm explaining, you know, in a way sort of, and, you know, I don't know if our philosophies align perfectly, but to me, a big part of, because when I moved to LA and, you know, wasn't, you know, I was just, you know, Jurassic Park was a thing I liked as a kid. Like,
yeah,
you know, it wasn't necessarily something I was going to start collecting or anything again. But I feel like what I love about your channel and what was inspiring about it was this idea that, like, it's not about, you know, the Funko Popization of collecting, like getting them all, getting the most expensive thing. It's almost just like finding the stuff that makes you happy, the stuff that interests you, the stuff that really, like, you know, moved you as a kid or something like that. Like, I love the idea that it's like, you know, the candy, this like weird tie-in book, you know, these trading cards from Australia. Like, it's the stuff, like, I look at my collection, you know, next to me right now, and it's like, you know, it's like weird stuff that like nobody would really care about, but like the select few that would be like, oh wow, I had those McDonald's cups as a kid or something like that. Just to bring it back a little bit, was it more of the idea of just trying to just like now, like, because to me it's like, oh, I'm an adult, I can buy whatever I want, I want the Red Rex again. Was it kind of
sort of
as simple as that?
Yeah, to a degree. Essentially, I'd come out of study and was working and earning money and was happy, and I just thought, you know, if I could own anything right now, what would you know, cheer me up? And it was the Red Rex. I thought, I wonder if, you know, people still sell. And I was surprised to find that you could actually get them as they came in the shop. And I thought, oh my goodness, like, that would be so cool to own it as it looked in the shop when I used to see this thing. And funnily enough, I didn't own the Red Rex as a child. So I think it was kind of like an unrequited, you know, like I really wanted to own this thing. And my parents, my grandparents got me the young Tyrannosaurus Rex, the smaller brown toy. And I remember kind of being slightly disappointed at first that they'd got the wrong one, but also I was over the moon that I got something official in Jurassic Park. And I guess it was kind of like a thing that had never been resolved in me, that I wanted to own this Red Rex. And then stuff happened, like I started to find more and more things that were related to Jurassic Park. And it was an obsession with eBay. I think, you know, Jurassic collectibles wouldn't exist without the joy that is eBay. The stuff you can stumble across while you're searching for your Jurassic Park Red Rex is numerous and wonderful. And you can come across and you're like, oh my goodness, I didn't even know this thing existed. And that for me was a wonderful voyage of discovery, because I loved Jurassic Park so much when I was younger, that to discover there was all this stuff that existed alongside what I knew of and had no idea about, and yet were really, really cool stuff, like stuff that showed behind the scenes, little snippets of how the film was made, the visual effects. It just opened my eyes and it just made me think, right, I want to collect this, but I want to collect it on a deeper level of what was popular at the time when the film came out, so I can get a feeling of the culture of the film when it actually came out kind of globally, but also what was important to me about Jurassic Park and why was it so special to me personally. And as I've gotten older, I've kind of shed a lot of the stuff that is kind of not stuff that was around when I was younger.
Yeah.
And I've focused more on things that really remind me of Jurassic Park in 1993, 92, because a lot of stuff did come out in 92. Yeah. And just anything that reminds me of how wonderful the film was in terms of, I keep on comparing the film to like a miracle. It is a miracle that film got made in the way that it did. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful film. Down to pretty much every facet, every aspect of the film of it. It's just a wonderfully put together film. And I just keep going back to that origin of Jurassic Park and looking at it and going, oh my God, that makes it cooler. And I never knew that about it. And that's the wonderful part of collecting Jurassic Park.
Well, it's interesting because I wouldn't necessarily say it's like anti-nostalgia, but it's almost like, how can I, instead of, you know, trying to like preserve the legacy and like in rose tinted glasses, it's more of like you're saying, it's more about almost like going back in time in a way.
Yes, like, absolutely. One of my favorite things is the marketing guide for Jurassic Park, which to me is like, it's like having a look inside the brain of the person who constructed my childhood. It's like, and seeing like, okay, so this is how we want to market Jurassic Park. And it's on the channel. I've done a breakdown of the marketing guide, but it's got like logos, you know, the way that you should lay things out on product. Here's some examples of product mugs, t-shirts. And to look at that and go, okay, they had it all planned. It was all planned out and they gave this to people. And this has become, you know, what saturated my childhood.
Yeah, yeah.
To see that in parts is amazing. And it makes me appreciate the marketing behind the film. But it's the same thing with like anything behind the scenes. So like the storyboards of Jurassic Park, and I'm lucky enough to own some original storyboards, some early storyboards for Jurassic Park. And again, it's the same appreciation looking at it and seeing this deeper level of planning and craft that went into this film. And, you know, maybe my love of it is creating this appreciation. Maybe the appreciation is just me. but I feel like the more I learn about Jurassic Park, the deeper it gets. It's like it just keeps getting deeper and deeper and deeper. And the nice thing is now a lot of creatives who were involved in the making of the film are coming out of the woodwork on Twitter, Instagram, or wherever. And I'm learning new stuff about the film that I really would have loved in that dead zone between, 2001 and 2015.
Yeah.
Like if I'd heard even one of these bits of information, these crumbs of information, it would have blown my mind. And now we're getting it like every other day because of Jurassic World and the exposure that that's giving the old films.
Yeah, that's a good point. I was going to say it's really lovely the way, you know, describing the sort of deeper appreciation of the film, because and your channel turned me on to these, which was the Australian trading cards, because
I love those.
I feel like as far as, you know, with everything in the original marketing and like, you know, the trading cards are such a, you know, such a big part of what I like, you know, in terms of like my corner of like what I love. So to see the Australian trading cards, which kind of aren't, they're not the same set of images that we're used to as far as like all the materials from, you know, the tie-in books and things like that as a kid. So to me, discovering those Australian trading cards in your channel and then actually trying to go on a hunt to find them.
Oh, I'm so glad. You know,
I think I found, like, I went to this like swap meet, kind of like nerd swap meet thing that's like in Southern California. And like I had to, it felt like old school. I was like, I had to talk to a guy and he was like, oh, I think I have a box of those somewhere. And like it not only like, you know, again, seeing this kind of different imagery that you don't normally see in the original like American marketing, but then also to have to like go on what almost felt like what you would have to do in the 90s to go find something,
yeah,
you know, cool. That also like was another level of appreciation for me, I think. Like, again, it's almost like collecting, you know, again, I feel like maybe I'll be harping a lot on the Funko Popization, but it just doesn't quite feel, you know, it, and I think it's been proven, you know, it's like the value of stuff that you can just sort of click and buy and, you know, it's inflated. It's like a false, you know, thing. And I obviously don't fault people who want to collect Funko Pops. I mean, I have a few myself, but, you know, it's, there's, again, it's that idea of like what things bring your, like, you know, it's almost like creating a new experience or something for you. I don't know if that is making much sense, but
no, that makes sense. And it's sort of like, the big bang of the idea of Jurassic Park, and kind of like as you get further away, the light is getting dimmer from the source. And, you know, you might have stuff that's inspired by this, you know, big bang at the beginning, but it wasn't part of it. And it didn't feel as crafted as those original things. I mean, there's something nice about the sort of primordial sort of state of Jurassic Park before it was even released. The fact that there wasn't really 100% match up on like the dinosaurs' designs. There were like the artwork that came out on products that wasn't kind of, you know, consistent with the film. And I think it all kind of built up this imaginary world of Jurassic Park if you were buying that stuff back then. And also there's the imaginary world of what other people are buying on other parts, you know, in like Australia, you're saying, you know, the dynamic trading cards. When I found out those existed, I was like, oh, so now I picture myself in Australia or New Zealand, collecting those cards in the 90s in the same way I did the Topps cards. And they came in like vending machines, I think. So I was I was trying to like picture people collecting Jurassic Park stuff through vending machines in 1992, 1993, and just trying to picture what that was like. And I just feel like it's almost like appreciation through collecting archaeology almost, you know?
I like that. Yeah, I think it's just, sort of getting in touch a little bit, you know, with your past self in a way that's, like we've been saying, shedding new light on it. But I mean, we might as well get this out of the way, because I'm just very curious, because I actually don't know if I know this entirely. But I mean, what is your Jurassic origin story? When was the first time you saw it? And like, when were you like, oh my gosh, this is, I have to, you know, like, how did that all begin?
So I think I was watching like one of those early morning news sort of TV shows where it's sort of light entertainment as well. And it came on, I was at school and I was probably about 5-6 years old, came on the TV and they showed a clip of Jurassic Park, and it was a few fleeting clips. I think one of them was the main road attack. And I just got this glimpse of the T-Rex going past what must have been the Jungle Explorer when it goes past the windscreen, I think, now looking back. I'm not 100% sure, but I remember that moment running out to my parents, screaming, saying, I've just seen a dinosaur on television. And because at the time, I think I was learning about them at school. Yeah. And I vividly remember constructing things at school related to dinosaurs and prehistory. I made a Brachiosaurus out of like toilet roll tubes in a box. and its neck was another toilet roll tube with another box on the top. And that was the Brachiosaurus. And I painted it sort of blue. And I remember like coveting this thing, thinking, I've got a dinosaur here and I've made this. And this is amazing. And then Jurassic Park hit at just that time. And I think late 80s, early 90s, dinosaurs were huge anyway. They were, they were pretty much everywhere, but there had been a bit of a lull in terms of their exposure, I think, because they'd sort of had a heyday, maybe late 70s, mid 80s.
Yeah.
And then they were still popular. Kids were still collecting, but generally they were like museum cast figures. I remember I had some dinosaurs from the museum, and then there's probably Dino Riders was popular, but that was still 80s stuff. So there wasn't really like a huge merchandise market for dinosaurs. It was probably t-shirts and things with dinosaurs on them, but Jurassic Park really came along and stamped authenticity on dinosaurs and really said, this is legitimate dinosaurs. And I remember that moment being crystallized by that early morning show and going out and saying to my parents. Then the next moment for me, the next kind of important point, was when Jurassic Park was in the cinemas following that, and looking across at the cinema across the road, my brother and sister had already seen Jurassic Park. They were older than me.
Oh, wow.
And they'd said, we were with our mum and dad, and they said, can we take David to go and see Jurassic Park? And for a moment, we were going to go. We were going. And then my parents stepped in and went, hang on, Jurassic Park, I think I've heard about that. That's a scary film. And my brother and sister said, it'll be all right. We'll go with him. He'll enjoy it. We'll take it. You know, we'll take him to go and see it. Mum and dad were like, no, you're not going to go and see it. And I remember that moment really clearly. So I had to wait a whole nother year until the VHS release, because I don't think people realized that the film didn't come out on VHS until over a year later, in 94, I think.
Yeah.
Then I remember watching Jurassic Park on my mother's lap with, like, you know, having my eyes covered for scary bits. And that was my first viewing of Jurassic Park. But my sister was the only person who had a VHS player in the house. So I would run upstairs to her room after school. And for about a year, no word of a lie, I went up every evening after school, went up, put the VHS in, started watching Jurassic Park again, watched it to the end, and then next day did the same thing for about a year, I think, on and off. I mean, I was probably playing with Jurassic Park toys as well. But yeah, that's how sort of addictive it was, you know, and how much I kind of adored that film And I did the same thing with other films after that, Star Wars and goodness knows what else. But Jurassic Park was the one that really stuck with me. And I think the fact that it came out with the making of Jurassic Park, which my friend had and had recorded off the television, and I used to ask if we could watch it every time I went around their house, that made it even better. Because you had the film, which I loved, and then you had the making of, which was almost a joy, you know, as equal, if not greater than the film itself, because I could see the craft that went into this film, and it was unbelievable. Full size, sculpted out of clay dinosaurs. I was like, what? Like, think about that. Clay was something you had. It was a tangible thing you could buy at the art store. And to think that someone had sculpted a T-Rex full size out of clay, I mean, that first blows your mind. And then you go on to the visual effects side of things, which, you know, I loved Terminator 2 and that sort of stuff. And to see the progression and the leap to making, you know, this real looking animal, it actually looks like it's there. I remember, just all of that blew my mind. And the Gallimimuses being in the handheld shot, looking back, that really blew my mind that they looked like they were there. And I didn't appreciate it at the time, but now I know that it's because it was filmed in a way that they'd never done that before, because it was handheld.
Yeah.
So to see visual effects in a handheld shot was so visually striking back then that you couldn't question that that was real. You could, like, even though they looked overly CG and now they look really CG, at the time, because of the fact they were just tracked into the shot, was so visually groundbreaking that that was a new visual concept to see that shot. So much about it was just brand new and fresh and exciting. But I think there was a little bit of not being allowed stuff that made me later on make up for that in my life, I guess.
Two things. I feel like the making of Jurassic Park, in a way, and I think them really sort of giving it that kind of behind the scenes treatment with, you know, James Earl Jones, like Darth Vader is telling us about how Jurassic Park was made. Like, to me, that's as iconic as the movie itself in a way. And and to your other point, I didn't realize we were actually basically the same age. I was 6 when Jurassic Park came out. And I feel like we were just having, you know, been doing this podcast for a while. It feels like it's like by the grace of God, by a flip of a coin, our age of like who got to see it and who didn't when it came out in theaters. And it was like our age was this thing of like, is it going to be too scary or is it not? And it's just like, truly, it feels like a flip of the coin of like who got to see it in theaters and who didn't. But it's but your story kind of, it almost makes me feel like, that's part of it, why it's almost like we were the perfect age for that movie. Like,
absolutely.
Because you weren't like, you know, if you were like, you know, 13 or 14, we probably wouldn't be like as, like sort of mystified by it. And then if we were too young, we maybe wouldn't, you know, have the same kind of questions about it. Because again, to your point, it's like Jurassic Park is something where you're like, oh, those are real dinosaurs. But then you're also being like, wow, look at what they had to do to bring this film to life. It was almost like the first time I ever thought about how movies were made.
Yeah, same. Absolutely. Yeah. It gave me an appreciation for filmmaking as a process and really turned me on to that. You know, before that, I think you kind of live in a world of imaginary stories and you think, oh, these are wonderful stories. But then when you see the craft behind the film, you're like, whoa, these people are like, you know, gods. They're like making this stuff from scratch with their hands. And I'm watching this film thinking, yeah, that looks really real. But I'm never questioning, where did that come from? And it comes from the hands of human beings. I mean, that part of it just blew my mind. Yeah. So, amazing stuff.
Yeah, I think for me, it certainly was, you know, it was just like, it's like that thing. I think it's, you know, either you were going to become a paleontologist or a filmmaker because of this movie. Like, it was like you had two paths laid before you.
Absolutely.
And was, I guess, how was the sort of transition into like The Lost World and JP3? Like, what was, because again, I feel like we were at that certain age where, like, by the time JP3 came out, and I think the disappointment of, and I don't know if this was the same for you. It's funny because I've gone back and I want to like like my girlfriend recently bought a handful of the JP3 figures. Like I sort of have this like weird, like, like thing against them, but I'm like, why? Yeah. They're cool. But I felt like for our age, it was like, okay, like, you know, JP3 was like fresh, like going into freshman year of high school. It's like, you know, oh, I'm going to start getting into like music and, you know, girls or what, you know, whatever, like,
yeah.
And was that kind of trajectory similar to you? Like, as far as like your fandom goes?
Yeah, definitely. And the Lost World, I was obsessed about, girls obsessed about Jurassic Park. And I had a friend who was equally obsessed with Jurassic Park. So to have a friend to kind of bounce stuff off of was really important, I think. And in anticipation for the Lost World, I was kind of like, I don't know, out of the two of us, I was probably the one who was focused maybe on the novel coming out. It was 1995 and I knew it was coming out. And I'd read the first novel and I'd understood most of it, but there was still a lot of stuff that had gone over my head, I remember. And then I remember holding and buying the second film novel and it having the little logo, the T-Rex circular logo in blue, I think it was, with the fogged out kind of mountainous, like either Nublar, well, it would have been Site B, either Sorna in the background. Then the beautiful illustrated map artwork on the inside binding was just blew my mind. And I remember thinking, this is Jurassic Park 2. This is the continuation of the story. And I read it and I remember thinking, I'm not sure how to take this story. I'm not sure how I feel about this story. I like it, but I'm not sure if it feels like the continuation of the film I saw. So, and then The Lost World came out and I was, you know, super excited for that. I remember seeing the teaser trailer for it where the T-Rex roars at camera and then the foot stomps down and leaves the puddle rippling. I remember seeing that in cinemas and losing my mind thinking this is going to be amazing. I was fully into The Lost World when that came out. It was huge. It was absolutely huge.
Yeah.
I was so excited for that film. To the same level as Jurassic Park, but I still remember thinking that Jurassic Park was my favorite. Even then, I remember thinking I prefer the roundedness of Jurassic Park, I think.
To your point, like, I think to me, Lost World, in a way, I remember the lead up to it more. And I think like, weirdly now I've started to sort of go back and appreciate in the same way, like, you know, Jurassic Park, I was six. And so the lead up to it, I wasn't quite as immersed in, whereas The Lost World, it was like, we saw commercials, TV spots, like the green and yellow, the caution, like the imagery of Lost World to me is almost more, it's almost more like I have more memories of like seeing, like I have memories of like going to Toys R Us and like trying to find Sarah Harding figure, like trying to find Ludlow, like,
You know,
never finding Sarah Harding. I recently bought an unopened Sarah Harding for the first time. I never do. Nice. I never splurge, but it was like something good happened at work or something like that. And I was like, you know what? I've always wanted that Sarah Harding figure.
Good for you.
I never find it in real life. Like has there been anything like that? I guess maybe when you, I was jumping ahead a little bit, has there been anything like that particularly where you were like, you know what? I'm going to do something nice for me. And you get something
that
you always wanted.
I think, you know, as I've gotten older and sometimes I think something's coming up that's like a screen used or production used. And I'll think, you know what, I have a real attachment to that. And I think that would be really cool to own. I don't do it so much lately as I did maybe 5 years ago or so. And I picked up some really nice things back then that have kind of like rocketed up in value now. A lot of like production pieces where I just think, you know what, I'm going to treat myself. And I remember I was seeing someone years and years ago and they were like, you never treat yourself. You never get anything for yourself. And I think that was before Jurassic Collectibles. Oh, wow. And I was like, I don't. And I remember thinking, why don't I? Why don't I just get something? I think that was the Red Rex. So, you know, that kind of started me off on that journey of treating myself, but also, you know, collecting to think, right, well, that was an important part of Jurassic Park history. The thing I think about with The Lost World, when you were saying about the packaging, is how sort of bold and audacious the packaging was. Yeah. It was really like, Because I think there was like a 60s resurgence around the time that The Lost World came out. Like mid-90s, they had like a 60s revival, like a very hippy-dippy, sort of very colorful, vibrant, almost like, I think early 90s was more tie-dye. But as it got into the mid-90s, there was like bright and bold colors. And if you look at like the sticker album and the cards, the Hops Collector's cards for...
So trippy.
Yeah, for The Lost World, they're so vibrant. I picked some up the other day, and they're so bright and colorful and strange, and like you just wouldn't get away with that kind of style, you know, now. But yeah, and I remember thinking about it. I remember when it came out. I remember seeing the bright green with the T-Rex that's been pushed in contrast and saturation until it's like almost purple.
Yeah,
and I remember seeing that, thinking, whoa. Like, this is The Lost World, you know, versus the Jurassic Park marketing that we'd become so used to. But it soon kind of, you know, it got your attention. You could see it for miles.
Yeah.
So it certainly worked in terms of its boldness.
Yeah, even if it didn't quite match up with the film itself.
No, it didn't. It didn't suit the film itself at all. The film was really dark. And if you think about the kind of decayed look of the logo on the rock, I mean, that's a complete contrast to the bright green. But maybe that was their strategy. Maybe they were thinking, in order to make this appealing to kids, we've got to have the bold and bright variation of this film. And that's how we're going to sell it to kids. And to go back to your point about Jurassic Park 3, I was excited about that film. I think I was on Dan's JP3 page.
Me too.
Which was, you know, a big part of my life. You know, that was really, it was basically a web page where people just talked about Jurassic Park. I believe previously it was Dan's The Lost World page.
Oh, wow.
But I joined when it was Dan's JP3 page, and it had a forum where you could discuss, you know, Jurassic Park and collecting and whatever you liked. It still exists. I think there's probably very few posts on there. Yeah, if you Google it, you can find it.
That's incredible.
But they had the up-to-date kind of info on Jurassic Park 3, and they were the first people to break the news of... the Spinosaurus logo, which they didn't even speculate what the dinosaur was in the logo. But as a kid, I saw that logo and thought that's a Spinosaurus, I think, because you could see the sail going back, the bone structure of the sail going back into the circle part of the logo. And I remember thinking that's got to be a Spinosaurus. And I got excited about Jurassic Park 3. I didn't like the idea of the Spinosaurus. I have to be absolutely honest. I didn't like the concept of that new dinosaur replacing what I felt was already an adequate apex predator, the Tyrannosaurus Rex. I didn't feel like there needed to be a new one for it to entice me. So I felt like that was a bit of a sellout. And I remember thinking that from the moment I saw that logo, like from the very first moment. But then I saw trailers and I thought, actually, this looks exciting. And seeing it in the cinema, I enjoyed the majority of it. I felt like the third act was really rushed and the ending I had problems with. but I felt like actually it felt consistent with the film so far. And it's only now looking back that I can see, you know, there is a lot of silliness. The characters are really, you know, quite grating. but I think in terms of the first act of the film and the way it builds things up slowly and you have Grant, I think it's held up by Alan Grant, if I'm absolutely honest.
Yeah.
And the interaction with the raptors, who are probably the most interesting dinosaurs in the saga. So I think I did like Jurassic Park 3, and then combined with the fact that a few years later, the DVD, the advent of DVD meant that the Jurassic Park trilogy came out on DVD for the first time, and I imported it from the US to get it in advance.
Oh, wow.
It didn't come out on DVD in the UK until about, I think, 3 years later.
Whoa.
It's always a waiting game over here. but I got it from the US and had it for those 3 years with all of the special features and everything that came with it. And I loved that DVD box set. I still have it, and I absolutely adore that box set because it was just everything that I wanted from the Jurassic Park trilogy crammed into one little box set. And that, for me, adds to the excitement of Jurassic Park 3 and the nostalgia looking back. You know, the fact that you had it the first time it was on DVD and so clear, and the menus.
It was my first DVD. I mean,
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Jurassic Park 3.
Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it wasn't necessarily that for me, I didn't like, it wasn't not liking it and then moving on or anything. It just was that thing of like, my priorities had changed and stuff. And I find it so funny now that there's so much nostalgia for the Spinosaurus, when I felt like just the days on Dan's JP3 page and on the forums and stuff of people. Yeah. Like we were feeling betrayed, and it's, I kind of adore the idea that now people, either who are a bit younger or are our age and are sort of like have a soft spot for the Spino now. It's just interesting, like, because it's like the perceptions, how we felt at the time. I mean, and that's a little bit of growth as well too, I'm sure, just looking at it from a different perspective. But I think with JP3, I remember the sort of Dan's JP3 page of it all. Like that to me, like, no joke, on my laptop right now, like on my desktop, I keep the file of Ellie grabbing the leaf from Dan's JP3 page. I sort of keep that as a good luck charm on my desktop.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
Like,
it had a download section. That was cool.
Yeah. It's again, it's that idea of like sort of sometimes the things surrounding the film can sort of bolster your love of it.
Absolutely. And at that point, I think maybe that site and Jurassic Park Legacy, which I wasn't a member of, were the two biggest kind of talking places for Jurassic Park news. I mean, Dan's JP3 page broke a lot of Jurassic Park news at that time. They got there first quite a few times. So I think that's why I gravitated towards Dan's JP3 page. And also, a lot of the opinions on that page seem to align with how I felt. When people saw the Spinosaurus, they felt the same way as I did. They felt, the T-Rex didn't need replacing. Why was this happening? And it, weirdly, I got a similar feeling when Jurassic World was coming out and we had the Indominus Rex. And I was like, here we go again. They're doing it again. It's funny that kind of that time that's crystallized. And yeah, it's nice that people like the Spinosaurus, because I enjoyed the Spinosaurus on a kind of epic level in the film, like the way that it was portrayed. I think of like the scene when it first emerges from the jungle and chases them around a corner and then kind of like gets its head stuck in the tree. And I remember thinking how energetic it was and how ferocious this thing was. And I was thinking, well, even though I don't like its inclusion, I can appreciate its construction and the craft and the animation. And that's a cool aspect of it. So they kind of won me over with the power of the thing. It's funny how people do really have a soft spot for the Spinosaurus. And I reviewed the toys, the Jurassic Park 3 toys on the channel, and I just did not experience that toy line. I remember them being in the stores and seeing them, and I wasn't even considering getting the Jurassic Park 3 toys, I don't think. But I remember seeing them and thinking, whoa, I'm definitely not getting them. The T-Rex sculpt was so off. And, for me, it felt like just recast the Lost World toys, just make them from the same molds, repaint them, and we'll be happy. That is what you do for a Jurassic Park toy line. But they'd gone with completely new sculpts that were not accurate, really, obviously, and the characters were out of scale with the larger dinosaurs. Yeah. So I was like, what is going on with this toy line? It just felt like a joke. And yet, when I came back to review them, I was like, I can see how children growing up with this toy line would have been really excited about it in the same exact way I was. It's almost like looking back and seeing my own progression allows me to see how people would really love Jurassic Park 3 if that was their first Jurassic or the one they remember seeing in the theaters.
And it almost, the way we talk about sort of the miracle of Jurassic Park, it almost seems that, the perfect storm of why JP3 sort of, caused this franchise to lie dormant for a while is more than just, say, the film itself, more than maybe the tumultuous making of the film, like the switching hands of the toys and sort of, again, this is the same thing for me. It's like, and being the age where it's like, okay, maybe I don't want to play with toys anymore. But then at the same time, it's like, well, I don't have incentive to get these toys because they don't even line up with the toys I already have.
Yeah.
So it's like, it was just this like perfect storm of things that made me go, all right, I'm going to set Jurassic aside for a little while. You know, obviously always liked it and stuff, but I mean, again, you know, I just look in my room right now and it's like I have more Jurassic stuff than I ever had as a kid, for sure. And, you know,
absolutely. Yeah, same. Yeah.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The first video that you put up, the Red Rex, was that 2009 or 2010?
2009, I think. There was a thing with YouTube where they, because I used the original Jurassic Park music, and then they started analyzing waveforms in videos to track if music was copyrighted. So at one point there was like essentially the danger of all videos on the channel like going down if I didn't do something. So what I did is I re-downloaded them, put royalty-free music on them and re-uploaded a lot of them, and at the same time started narrating them. And that was like the first time I'd put my voice to the video, strangely enough. It sounds like we're talking about kind of talkies, like we're going back to sort of like early cinema, but it really wasn't that big a deal. It was just the fact that I hadn't gotten round to doing any vocal stuff on the channel. I just felt like it was music and the images were enough. I think at the same time, JP Toys 97, who I hugely admire and respect at the time, I think he's Red Hanya now, was really affected by this. And I think they stopped doing reviews. I think they stopped doing videos where they had the Jurassic Park music over the top and they had like text at the bottom, narration type thing, and that was it. And they just stopped. They were like, ugh. You know, because it was like all this backlog of all their videos that were hugely popular had been destroyed. And it was such a shame. So yeah, 2009 was when I started. There probably is a 2010 or 2011 equivalent of that Red Rex video. And that's the one where I'm talking over the top. I mean, it's a very brief snippet of a video. It's just like me editing like this thing. And I think it's still standing on like the pink foam that came in the box that it arrived in. And I was just enamored with it. I just couldn't believe that someone had kept it in such good condition for all these years. I felt like it had almost like come out of a time machine. And, you know, all the colors were rich on it and the T-Rex was just there in the box. I could, you know, reach in and touch the skin. And it was just amazing to think, wow. It was also huge. And I was thinking, where the hell am I going to put this thing? But at the same time, it did make me think, wow, you know, I kind of want to go back and get the other ones. The Triceratops was another one that I had a soft spot for because the Triceratops toy, I don't think a lot of people realize, but there weren't many big dinosaur toys like back then. I'm talking about those museum ones that are cast. They were quite small. You'd have like little tiny ones that you could get that were kind of like, I don't know, like ones you could find in a cereal packet or something like that. Very small toys. But you didn't really have these chunky in your hand toys. And the Jurassic Park commercials on TV really showed off how big these toys were when you saw the Triceratops attacking the Jeep or whatever. And the Triceratops was one really big, chunky, square dinosaur that I remember thinking, that is amazing. That is probably one of the coolest dinosaur toys I've ever seen. And it was just the Triceratops. But yeah, that still remains one of my favorite toys just because of its mass as a toy. It is just huge. And we've had loads of big Triceratops toys since. And Tycho with the Dino Riders line were probably the pioneers of that, to be fair. They got there first, but if you look at the Tycho Dino Riders stuff, they were the prototypical Jurassic Park toys, and it seems like Kenner were probably looking at those. What's on the market right now? They got all of those in and thought, right, how can we improve these? Okay, let's take some of the stuff they've got going for them. The other thing I was thinking today is dino damage is so cool when you think about it, because up until that point, we hadn't actually thought about dinosaurs fighting and actually, you know, in conflict, injuring each other, and the goriness of
flesh and blood creatures.
Yeah. I mean, because Jurassic Park really pushed this goriness. There's a load of products here in the UK that had like dripping blood motifs on them with the Jurassic Park logo. And it's something you forget about Jurassic Park, that there was this undertone of it's really gory and scary at the same time. And the toys, you know, kind of epitomized that. They had the removable flesh wound with the anatomy underneath. And that was just so exciting as a kid. I can't, you know, overstate how cool that was. So yeah, I remember seeing that combined with the Triceratops and thinking, wow, I'd love to own one of those. But again, the Triceratops is one I didn't own when I was little. And I thought, well, I'd like to get one when I'm older. And I think I got two somehow. I can't remember how. I got one and then one came up really cheap and I thought, I can't turn that down. So I had two. So I was like, right, well, I'm just going to unbox this one. I'm going to experience what I didn't experience when I was little and open this thing up as if it's, you know, Christmas Day. And I filmed that. And that became one of the very popular videos on the channel. So yeah, unboxings at that time when it wasn't kind of sacrilegious to open Jurassic Park toys. I think I just got away with it.
You're right. That's a good point. Yeah. People now would be like, wait, you're opening, you know,
it would be a crime.
And it just feels like, you know, unlike say Star Wars, it feels like there's a limited amount of Jurassic Park toys, you know,
yes.
Like it feels like I feel like as far as like Lost World trading cards, I feel like are really hard to find in unopened now. I feel like it's almost, I used to be able to see unopened boxes for like, you know, $25 to $50. And I remember getting the Tops, an unopened box of Tops cards, which is what kind of, you know, watching your channel and then going to this swap meet thing and getting like the original Tops cards. I got that box for like $10, you know,
that's amazing.
Like, I'd love your thought on this, you know, because I think we were saying in the beginning, like there's this joy of like, cool, I'm an adult, I get to buy whatever I want. But I'm also like, you know, I'm starting to realize too, that there might be a not a danger to it, but it's almost like, you know, like with Pokemon cards, for example, it's like, you know, one pack was so hungry for as a kid. And it's like, now that I can buy a whole box at once, it's like, you know, there's an element of like, you know, chasing that sort of, you know, high. And I think to me this, and, you know, I want to get your thoughts on Jurassic World. And it kind of feels like, you know, it seems like you haven't really been into Jurassic World at all, this phase of the franchise. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like and I kind of almost find that refreshing. And again, I want to hear what your actual thoughts are. But to me from the outside, it's like, well, yeah, if you don't like this thing, then you don't have to buy it. Like you don't have to collect it if it's not the thing that brings you joy.
Yeah, I think I was speaking to Tom, who's a co-creator on the channel, Tom Jurassic, and I was saying how it felt to me like there was a certain point in my life where I was just about to have children, and it kind of like changes your whole outlook on things. At the same time, I saw Jurassic World, and yeah, I wasn't hugely impressed with that film. But there's a whole new generation who adore that film, and they're coming up, and that is their introduction to Jurassic Park. And it felt like that was their time to enjoy the world of Jurassic, and it's their time to buy the merchandise. And I think I do kind of with collecting. When I started Jurassic Collectibles, I did a bit of everything. I did a bit of Jurassic Park. I did a bit of Star Wars, Back to the Future. I did lots of films that were really, you know, popular and inspired me when I was younger. But I would say as time has gone on, I've just been really honest with myself, and I collect stuff from just Jurassic Park because I think, well, that was the time when I, you know, fell in love with this story, and this is the stuff that makes me most excited. So I'm just true to myself. I think with like some of the Jurassic World Legacy stuff, that's cool because that allows me to enjoy some of the older stuff with maybe newer toy technology or,
yeah,
you know, and I think you were very helpful in me acquiring a certain box set with like Alan Grant and an array of dinosaurs that's really hard to track down here in the UK. And I thank you so much for that. And that's a nice way to connect with, you know, my collecting days when I was younger. But I don't go overboard on collecting Jurassic World stuff because, like you say, I didn't connect with the film in the same way that I did the original. I felt like Fallen Kingdom was a better film in terms of direction, but I'm waiting to see what happens in Dominion, and I'm excited about the old cast coming back.
Yeah.
I just feel like I'm not as invested in this new trilogy as I was the original trilogy, and perhaps because Dominion is going to be more consolidated with the old story, I'll be more invested in this chapter. But it still feels like I've had a sort of like I've left the dock. I've left the dock of Jurassic Park, or Jurassic World is a, I'd say it's kind of like its own dock, really. And I've departed on a boat, and I'm kind of looking at it from the ocean. I'm looking back on it and going, oh, there it is. Okay. Whereas Jurassic Park, I'm very firmly moored for life. You know, that is Jurassic Park, the original, is the one that I'm trading with. You know, that's the place where I live. So, yeah, I'm just very honest with myself in that way. And I think, you know, I could collect everything. I could review everything on the channel. I'd have no room, and I'd live in a house that was absolutely stuffed with Jurassic World stuff. But I think there would come a point where I'd be like, why am I doing this? Like, why am I, you know, surrounded by this stuff that I'm about a franchise I'm not entirely enthused about. So I'm glad that I made that decision, and Tom has come on board and he's doing a fantastic job with the channel. And I'll come in here and there and do some Jurassic Park reviews. But yeah, Jurassic Park is where my heart is at, really.
Yeah, well, and it's almost like, because this is just making me think, like, you know, not everything, as far as, again, if we're, you know, thinking about films and then also just collecting things and stuff. And in a weird way, to me, Fallen Kingdom, almost the toys that came from that with Mattel taking over are almost the most innovative thing about this new phase of the franchise, because I never thought, and I've said this before on the podcast, I never thought I would collect toys ever again. I moved to LA. I was like, okay, cool. I'm going to get into trading cards. I'm going to do all that stuff. And now I'm surrounded by dinosaurs again. And it's like, because good. I feel like it captures the magic of, like, not just Jurassic, but just like dinosaurs themselves. And it's like getting to see dinosaur toys for species that I always wanted, you know? And I wonder if, you know, when we look back, you know, at this franchise as a whole, that this era, that maybe the Mattel toys are actually going to be what's sort of cited as a high point for this time.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I quite often think that. I think that the toys have been exceptional. And you know, in terms of world building and, you know, for kids growing up with Jurassic World, that must be really wonderful, you know, to kind of delve into all these different dinosaur species and build their own worlds. I mean, it's the kind of extent that we dreamt of when, you know, the Jurassic Park toys came out. I think the Mattel toys are definitely a high point of this new franchise. And it kind of came out of nowhere, like, You had the Hasbro attempt, which, you know, again, it was like JP3 again, I felt. And then suddenly Mattel came through with, you know, this colossal T-Rex. And it was just as I was kind of like getting out of the franchise in a way, getting out of, you know, Jurassic World. And I just remember thinking, these toys are amazing. Like, whoever is behind this genius is just, you know, that it's just spot on. And it's just, yeah, I think it's captured the imagination of, you know, a lot of Jurassic Park old school collectors. They're like, these are the toys that we wanted in 1993, 1997. Yeah. And it's just amazing. I think it comes at a time when technology is allowing the production of dinosaurs to this quality. I think a lot of it's got to do with 3D printing, making things digitally, you know, being able to test things digitally in a way that we couldn't with toys when we were in the 90s. A lot of them were cast off of, you know, hand sculpted figurines. And Stan Winston sculpts, you know, a lot of them were actually, you know, Stan Winston original sculpts that they'd repurposed and turned into toys, which blows my mind. But yeah, I think the leaps in technology have meant that now children are really able to enjoy the toys that are associated with Jurassic World. They're very, very lucky. So yeah, that's a really cool thing about this new franchise.
As far as like collecting goes, like if, you know, if people have, again, because I, you know, I think our philosophies as far as collecting goes are pretty similar. But like, if, you know, if somebody was to start, maybe not even Jurassic specifically, but like, what would be your sort of like key things or key like tips to keep in mind when starting to collect or thinking about getting back into it? You know, again, I truly like, you know, when I discovered your, I mean, a lot of stuff I've like gotten because of your channel, like the Lost World, like storybook and like the stuff that, again, it's like, it's either like I have a weird soft spot for Congo toys because they're basically just repaints of a lot of the Kenner stuff. Like, it to me, it's like those things that kind of drive my imagination versus like what is the most valuable. But yeah, if somebody were to get into collecting now, what would be kind of your tips for them?
Well, I'd say become familiar with eBay or other auction sites. And I would say always go for the stuff that speaks to you. I'm constantly fascinated by the fact that I can pick something up for £10, which is, you know, it's not too much. And it'll be something that I've been looking for years. And it's so cheap. No one wanted it. And yet, if you look at it, the packaging or the book or whatever's contained inside, that you're thinking, this is pure treasure to me. This is gold dust. And so it's not about how much the thing costs. And the other thing is, like, when I bought a lot of the stuff in 2009, 2010, it was not as expensive as it's gotten now. So I imagine there's going to be a lot of Jurassic World collectors listening. You know, get your Holy Grail pieces in, you know, fairly early. Get something that you kind of thought, oh, yeah, actually, I probably will get that one day. Get it now. Just get one piece. You know, it doesn't have to be very much. Just get one piece that you're getting. I saw the Brachiosaurus, the Legacy Brachiosaurus, came down. It was half price here in the UK the other day.
Oh, wow.
You know, it's stuff like that when you think, you know, if you're just going to get one thing, get that. Don't spend the earth. Get something that's a real bargain and you're really pleased with, and you know that it's going to last and is going to be a piece to remember. It doesn't have to be what everyone else is collecting at that point in time. I mean, I partly envisage maybe one day Jurassic Park stuff going down in value. I don't know. I imagine it will go up for Dominion because there'll be a lot of exposure. But maybe Jurassic Park stuff will go down again like it did in the, you know, the lull between Jurassic Park 3 and, you know, Jurassic World. And if it does go down, maybe exploit that time to grow your collection, you know, and wait for stuff. Be patient. You don't have to get it when it's at its most expensive. You can wait on eBay, you know, do a safe search and, you know, keep an eye out for stuff. But what I wouldn't want people to do is to think, I need to collect absolutely everything, regardless of whether I have a connection with it. Because I collect a lot of stuff, but I do genuinely only pick up stuff that I think I've got a connection with that. And I do sell stuff as well. I sell stuff that I think, okay, I've got two of that. Why do I need two? I don't need two. Or, you know, oh, this is something from The Lost World. I love The Lost World, but my main love is Jurassic Park. So I'm going to pass this off, sell it, give it away. And I think that's important too, is not to be too possessive and think, right, okay, actually, what does this speak to me? So keep the cost low. And does it speak to you? That's the secret.
I think that's great advice. And I think, again, keeping that sort of pressure off people to, you know, to indulge in things that maybe they're not always comfortable to indulge with. You know, like, yeah. Personally for me, I'm not interested in any of the pteranodons of the Mattel toys. Like, they're just, they don't speak to me. And so,
right. You know,
I don't want to buy them, so I'm not going to.
Yeah.
And I guess maybe this should be my last question, but okay. Is there anything that you still, is there any holy grails that you still haven't gotten yet?
You know, I often think about this and I think, you know, I've got enough. I think I'm actually really satisfied with all the things I've collected. Every so often I'll see something and I'll think, oh, I'd really like to own that as well. So I'll either watch it, wait for it and get it, or I'll kind of just treat myself. I'll just think about a bad week or, you know. I do still collect stuff, but I just think I've got enough. I think there's a lovely time when you just think, I'm grateful. I'm happy. And Jurassic Park, the main thing to take away from Jurassic Park is the enjoyment of that story and the film. That is the thing I'm most grateful for. If anything now, I guess I feel like a custodian of stuff that I should probably look after, because on my demise, it's going to be left and it's going to go somewhere else. So I guess I'm a custodian of stuff for my life. And that's a good way to look at it and think, well, in that way, it's probably most important that I pick up stuff that speaks to me, because it's going to say who I was as a collector and what I was interested in and what was important to me. So, I'm quite happy. But I think holy grails, I'm trying to think now. That's a really good question. It's not so much picking something up as maybe meeting someone. So I would like to meet Spielberg. Yeah. I would like to meet George Lucas or, you know, anyone involved with the film, speak to them, just ask them a few questions. I think those are the holy grails to me, is learning and feeling closer to the franchise. I've got a hardcover making of Jurassic Park book that I don't know how I stumbled across on eBay.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, for $21, exactly. I'm not even sure how many of these were made. Because I've seen one more and it was signed by Spielberg himself.
Wow.
So I would really love to get mine signed by Spielberg, and just to say thanks. Just to say, you know, I don't know whether you enjoyed or how you feel about that production, because he had a hard time on that. Like, he was going into Schindler's List and he was pulled away and, you know, there was lots of stuff going on there. Yeah. So I kind of feel like I just want to say, you know, thanks for how much attention you paid to that film, how much detail you put in and how much passion you put into it, because it's really changed my life. And that's probably the holy grail that I would really like. And that would be the ultimate part of my collection.
Oh, I love that so much. I mean, again, it's like the first step is getting stuff. The second, the maybe the more important part is enjoying it, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. Enjoying it. Yeah, absolutely. Because why collect it if you don't enjoy it? And that's the thing. I'm trying to get my display sorted with all, like, as much of the stuff. I'm looking over. I'm actually right next to it. I've got my McDonald's Jurassic Park cups. And I've got some Jurassic Park maquettes and some of the Topps cards, some of the old candy things in there, like original display from the shop. And what I think is, why have I put this stuff on display? And what it does is it just transports me back to that year, couple of years, when it was huge, when Jurassic Park was huge, and I was there and I was so excited about it. And I think that that's what's important to me, is being transported back to that magic. That's what I think I collect for now.
Wow. Beautifully said. David, this has been so much fun, so incredible. Thank you
for
the time to chat with me today.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me on. It's been an honor.
Where can people find you, follow you? You know, see, because I'm moving soon. So I was like looking up to see if you had videos of like showing your collection or building stuff, because I'm like wanting to get inspired. Where can people, you know, get all that kind of thing?
Yeah. So if you probably the best place is youtube.com/Jurassic Collectibles. There has been a series I've done on there. If you look for the playlist where I've been building a display. So if you want to see my collection building up, I haven't done like a collection tour because I'm kind of waiting for that display to culminate and complete. So I haven't done that. And gosh, I mean, there's so much stuff that I wish I had time to film right now. Probably one of the most interesting ones is Jurassic Park blueprints for the exterior sets in Kauai.
Ooh.
And I have a whole load of these. And they're going to be great videos. I've done one on the visitor center, but I've got a whole load more. And they're magic. I mean, they are magic. You're looking at, like, the design of the sets that we all know and love. So that will be future videos. But yeah, you can check me out there on YouTube. And then on Twitter, at Jurassic Collect. And then Facebook, I think it's Jurassic Collectibles, facebook.com/Jurassic Collectibles. And then we're also on Instagram, I think it's at Jurassic Collect again. Yeah, but if you search Jurassic Collectibles YouTube, you should be able to find most of the content on there. And Tom is doing a smashing job, so there's a lot of Jurassic World content on there as well. So definitely go and check it out.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.